last week, we were in the middle, as we see these psukim there, like each pasuk has so much. So today, here, at least I just want to give you this.
I'm just going to give it as we go along, because I don't want to get old. So the one is the psukim that we have all of them here that we'll do, but the extra things. So last week we finished on page number of the Chumash book, it's 294, because we were talking about the fact that if you have an animal that has been torn, so to speak, has been killed by another animal in the field, and now it's a trefa, so it's all torn, what do you do with the flesh? Because it's not kosher, right? It hasn't been shechted. So as we said, you throw it to the dogs. And we explained, this is what we ended up last week, we finished with this, that we explained why to the dogs. The truth is you can do anything with it, really. It's not kosher, but it's not milk and meat. So you can, why do we give it to the dogs? And we said specifically because since the dogs didn't bark when we left Egypt, so this is a thank you to the dogs. As we said, that Torah teaches us such an incredible sensitivity that anything that has ever provided anything for you, you should always feel a certain measure of indebtedness and gratitude. Just again, focusing on that idea. Obviously, you can give it to a non-Jew. You can do lots of things with it. But as the Torah says, the ideal is to pay back somebody that gave you something good. I wanted to show you one thing before we move on to the next pasuk, because we won't dwell too much about this mitzvah now, but just one Sefer HaChinuch today. Next week we'll do more, but just one. So the other sheets that I just gave you, it's two double-sided, and as we say, I want to see what's the root of this mitzvah. What's the idea of the fact that this animal, instead of, yeah, it's this one, that's right, this animal that instead of it being, which page is the first side I'm looking here, it's
284.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Daisy. The one that says 284, that's side one. I should have put one and two, and I didn't. Okay. So why is it that, what's the idea of this mitzvah? This, as we say, the torn flesh is called trefa, and we don't eat it. Why? So this is a very interesting principle that I want to show you from the Sefer HaChinuch, because most people, when we talk about kosher, not kosher, animal that's torn, not torn, milk, meat, whatever, we always say that we shouldn't say it's for health reasons, right? We always say that. But I want to show you the Sefer HaChinuch's approach, a little, always nice to see all the different approaches. Lisa, sorry, here you have to, here, here we go. Here we are, no problem. Good morning. Okay, so I should have bracketed, but it's the third paragraph. Remember, it starts the words, Mishar She Mitzvah Zu. Sort of the second paragraph, Mishar She Mitzvah. And in the English, it's at the root of. So what's the root? What's the meaning of this? It's page 284, Mishar She Mitzvah Zu. Do you see it? It's like, it indents a little bit, the third paragraph there. Okay, so he says, Lefi Shehaguf, since the body, Kli L'Nefesh, is the vessel for the soul, ubay sasep ulasa, and through the body, the soul is able to do its work. Vizulasai loisishale mlachtalailam, and without the body, the soul cannot accomplish what it needs to forever, and especially in this world, impossible. Valkain ba'abitsilai viloi liraasa. So therefore, the Torah tells us many different things, how we have to make sure to protect it. And as he says, therefore the spirit comes into the shadow. What does that mean? It means, as he says, not to harm it. We have to be very, very careful not to harm the body. Ki hakel lo yareya aval yetiv lakol. Hashem doesn't want anything bad for anybody. He wants only benefit and good. Nimtza ki haguf bein yadeha. So what do we find? What's the body for us? It's like my hatzvas biyad hanopach. Like we say, the tongues are in the hands of the toolmaker. Asher ima yoitzi kli l'maaseyu, with the tongues he can create other tools. It's not even just creating something, but it's the tools with which he can fashion other things, and that's dependent on the quality of the tongues. And that's what our body is
for us, for our neshama. So therefore, uba emes, ki b'hiyayis ha-tzvas chazak u'mechuvayin, as much as this the tongues that we have are strong and exact, and in other words, are in good condition and made well, le'chayis b'hakelim, and they can hold on to whatever it wants to create, all the vessels, ya'aseim ha'uman toivim, then the craftsman will be able to fashion good tools, as good as the tongues are. That's how good the tools will be. But if their tongues are no good, you won't be able to fashion proper vessels, as we know. Therefore, the same thing, if the body has any negative, whatever, from whichever inyan, so whatever, anything which is not healthy, so to speak, tispatel pu'ulas ha Seichel kefi oisai hefsit. It's quite an amazing thing. What will happen is the function of the intelligence, as we say, will be nullified corresponding to that defect. Interesting that he's using that word, the intelligence, because what he means is everything that we want to do in any spiritual or physical realm. But the fascinating thing is that many people nowadays, we know more. But until recently, this was written not in the 1200s. In those times, people were not so aware of the effect of the physical health on the mental health. It was considered two separate things. People can be mentally healthy and physically unhealthy. Physically, now we know how everything works together. Our emotions, our mental, our physical health. This is, as we can say, many, many years old. And as we can see, the Sefer HaChinuch says, the Torah already tells us from thousands of years ago that if we want to be spiritually healthy, if we want to be with our intelligence intact, then we have to have physical health. Now, let's see how that connects, and then we'll see in a minute. So he says like this, and that's why, therefore, because of that, therefore the Torah distances us, anything that will cause anything negative in the body, the Torah keeps us away from it. So according to this, we can explain the pshat, the simple noimar shebo lano ha'isur b'Torah. So we will say that the Torah forbids us b'chol ma'acholos ha'asurim, from all the things that we are forbidden to eat, right? So all the not kosher foods. Ve'im yesh mehem she'ein noida lano. So then comes the big question. But nowadays we say that it's not true, right? The not kosher food is not unhealthy. Sometimes kosher food is much more unhealthy. But as we say, the Jewish cuisine is not the healthiest. But nevertheless, he says, so what does this mean? So what if somebody says that? So he says a very interesting thing. It's a very interesting approach that we're meant to have. He says, ve'im yesh mehem she'ein noida lano v'loy lechach meha. And if there are things that we are not aware of, in other words, we don't know that it's harmful to us, it doesn't seem harmful, and not only to us, but even to the best doctors, niskan, how they can do damage, even if we are, and the doctors are unaware, al tisma aleihem, do not wonder about it, ki harayfe ha-ne'eman, because the trusted doctor, shehizhironu bahen, who warned us about it, which means obviously Hashem, chacham yoyser mimcha, he's much smarter than you, umehem, and from all the doctors. V'kama niskal v'nivhal mi, and how foolish, how stupid it would be somebody, mi shechashav she'ein l'dvarim nezek, somebody who thinks that some of these things don't harm, oil in his galus, nezek oita elas, harm or benefit, ela b'masha hisig, who only what he understands. Anybody who thinks that they can grasp everything about the health or the not health of something is a fool. The truth is, we do see this. This is something interesting that we see as time goes. Nowadays, everything is in fast forward, so we can even document it in the last 30 years, how everything changes every year. One day this is healthy, the next day it's not healthy. One day this is, and this is what keeps on happening, right? This is the case. Maybe you can say science is progressing. Perhaps it is. But the point is that any human being who will be so conceited as to say that they have it, they know exactly what is healthy, what is not, what causes damage, what doesn't, is a fool. It's obviously a fool, because we know that there's so much more that we don't know. Who is the one that knows everything? Only Hashem, the creator of everything to begin with. Not doesn't mean he always lets us know, right? We don't know everything. Even in Torah, we don't necessarily know. But we know that if he directs us in a certain way, it's obviously for our benefit. That's the definite. So let's see how he says, V'yesh lecha ladas, so we should know, ki l'tayal seinu, le'nizgala sibasan. And it's interesting, it would be simple, we would think, that if Hashem would say in the Torah, don't eat, let's say in this context, don't eat the treifa animal, the animal that was devoured in the field, because if you eat it, such and such and such, whatever, you'll have a heart attack. Well, that would be simple, right? Then we would all stay away from it. So the Torah, he says a very interesting thing, that this was very specific, that Hashem did not tell us, and the Torah did not tell us exactly all the, it didn't reveal all the reasons and v'niskan and all the different harms. Why? Pen yakumu anoshim achzikim atzman k'chachamim. Because there will be people who will get up who will think that they are very, very clever. Chachamim gedolim, really clever. V'yishak mulaymar, and what will they say? Nezek plainly, this harm, she'amra ha'tayra, that the Torah tells us, she'yesh bedavra plainly, that comes from this and this thing, einenu, is only ki'im b'mokim plainly, only in this place, she'tivay ben Cain, that their nature is this way, ay be'ish she'tivay Cain, or it only applies to a specific person, and we have that already, right? So if the Torah would have said, do not eat because of that, then we would have always found a way around it. We say, that's fine, that applies in Spain, that doesn't apply in Australia. That's what we would say. So therefore, the Torah doesn't say that. He doesn't even give us this. This is only from the Torah doesn't say, don't eat treif because it's going to harm you. He just says, don't eat treif. But the Sefer HaChinuch says, we should know that it definitely, if we eat it, it will cause us harm. That's what he says. We should be aware. And he says, v'yispata l'divreyim echad min apsayim. And not only will some people hold that way, but foolish people will be influenced by them. Al kein lo nisgala taiman lahayil lanu min hamichshal hazeh. Therefore, the reasons were not given to us, were not revealed to us to prevent us from this stumbling block. And then he continues something very interesting. V'yadua hadavar midarchei harefua. He's still backing up his claim that in, as far as health is concerned, physical health, eating something treif isn't healthy. Why does he say that? So he says it is known from the ways of, you know, from doctors, so to speak, from science, shebasar kol hatreifas haasurais lanu, that the flesh from all of these treifas, I don't know how you translate it, but any of these animals that are forbidden to us, that because they were torn, so to speak, that they were killed in the way that they were killed, mailid hefsid el guf eichlei, will actually result in something negative to somebody who eats it, to the body of the one who eats it. Why? Machmas shatreifais mayrech chayli babahema. When something is treif, it indicates illness in the animal. Okay, sometimes it's been devoured, and sometimes, as we know, like let's say you can open it up and then there's damage to the lungs or this, and you see that there's something unhealthy in the animal itself. And he says if you eat the animal that has some unhealthy thing in it, that will be transferred to you. That will cause something unhealthy in the person that eats it. Very interesting. He says like this, Al taksha lecha, don't question v'taymer ma hefsed efshar liyais babahima shenitrafa miyad v'nishchata. Don't say, it's not possible. What happens if an animal was, a lion came and, I don't know, and tore open a cow, but then you shechted it immediately, right? So there wasn't much time in between. So what damage could there be there? So he says a very beautiful thing. He says, ki loy mi chachma taksha zeh. That's not a wise question. Why? This is actually very powerful, because also something that scientifically, I think now more than ever, is what they're saying generally, that everything has a beginning. Everything starts somewhere. Now, many times when we see something negative, we don't see it until it has actually evolved into something much, much bigger. But if we track it down in its original, so to speak, it started somewhere very, very, very small. Once it starts, the negative is there. And if you don't stop it immediately, and we know that with many, many things, what's going to happen is that it's going to multiply and it's going to end up being very, very dangerous. Everything has a source in something very small originally. We see that with men. That's why we talk now about preventative medicine. We see that with many illnesses, and even not only in physical health, we see it so much now in psychological health and all types of things that if, and even with children, that's why we say early intervention and all these type of things, because this comes from this idea that if you catch it right at its beginning, okay, fine, but The problem is that potentially it's already started something negative. It's not so simple once the negative has already taken, so to speak, hold. So this is a problem. So therefore he says, so therefore the fact is that there's something there that's negative. There's something there that's harmful. And therefore he says, let's see, if im toidei like he ba'irach hazman yimatzeh hefsed ba, and if you will admit to me that if you will wait, you will find something negative, machmas ha-treifas, because of this original treifa, tischayev lahaydes, then you will be forced to admit ki berega harishain, that at the first moment already, huschala hefsed, then the negative has already began, ela shehu muat b'haschala, but it's just only that it's smaller at the beginning, ve'ein safek, and it's no doubt, ki min hanezek ra, that from this damage and this negative damage that has been done, afilu mi'uta, even if it's only a little bit, okay, that's one thing. So that's the first thing that he says. I just want to read one last small line that he puts, and he says another thing. Shekol dinei ha-Torah, all the laws of the Torah. V'chol davar sheyesh like kaima, anything that you want to exist forever, that you want that it shouldn't stop, begeder kaze yischayev liyais, that you want it to continue with these specific rules. Sheim titein dvarecha l'sheuron lo yischayim davar b'derech la'olam. If you give, very interesting, this is a fact, right? So if you give, let's say, reasons, or if you give limits on something, then it will not continue. It's very interesting. In other words, if you make something dependent on something else, then obviously it already becomes conditional. Something which is conditional doesn't have that permanence. That's why. This is two different really answers he's giving. And the truth is, we still do say we don't know the reason for treif. We don't know. And maybe it doesn't harm. We don't know. Perhaps it doesn't. But according to the Sefer HaChinuch, it does do physical harm. We might say that for somebody to whom it's forbidden, it does. And for somebody to whom it's not forbidden, it doesn't. That's also possible, because Hashem can do anything. But the point is that for us, we have to be aware that just because we don't necessarily understand or can't prove it scientifically doesn't mean that it's not there, as he says. And this is a very important approach generally to all the mitzvahs that we have, because we can see the Sefer HaChinuch's approach altogether is that most mitzvahs were given for the benefit of man, whether it be to improve him, right, to make him a more refined person, or even physically to make him, otherwise he can't accomplish anything. Another important thing that we'll leave with this is a very interesting thing in this mitzvah. We see, again, it stresses so many times in Torah how important it is for us to take care of our physical health, because it's only with our physical health that we are able to accomplish, to do anything in this world. And it is literally that Hashem gave us this body that we have as such a gift, and it houses our neshama, our soul. So it's a very powerful thing that again comes through this mitzvah again. Okay, we're going to leave this. Yes, Leah.
Can I tell you a little story?
Sure.
Some family has a dog that they eat only kosher food. A thief came and gave the dog non-kosher food. The dog, because he wanted to enter the house, the dog wouldn't touch it.
Interesting.
So I'm thinking, maybe the dog also will.
Who knows? You never know. I don't know. What
goes... Anybody can answer that.
That's right. Well, the dog can't communicate, so he can't.
But the dog has more.
It's fascinating.
Than we do.
It does. It does have more instinct. It's true. Quite interesting. Okay. There we go. Fascinating thing. Okay, I want to go now to let's go back to the pages in the Chumash. Now, I want to tell you, this is a little bit technical, but we're going to see some beautiful things. So first, we have to just understand the simple meaning of the Psukim. So it's page 294. It's only one word on that page. And then we're going to go straight to page 295. Now we are moving on to a different mitzvah, where we're going to see a little bit of judgment, a little bit about court cases, but we'll see. So he says, the first pasuk is, Loi sisa shema shav. You shall not, and in English they translate on page 295, you shall not bear a meritless report. I'll tell you in a minute what that means. Let's look into Rashi. Al toshes yodcha im rasha. Do not put your hand with an evil person. Lihiyais eid chamas, to be a false witness. Let's see what this pasuk means. Okay, because this is the introduction almost to the next psukim, which will talk also about how, when we judge and how a court, so to speak, runs, how it works with the judges. But just to see this pasuk first, because this one really is more for every person. So the first thing, Rashi, it's still on page 295. Rashi says, "You lay sisa shema shav, you shall not bear a meritless report." What does that mean? So he says we have to understand it according to the way Targum Unkelus understands. How does he understand? Loy sikabel shma dishkar. You shall not accept a false report. What does that mean, you shall not accept a false report? So he says, azhara, this is actually a negative commandment, lemekabel lashon hara, to one who accepts lashon hara. Now let me tell you like this. We have the mitzvah of lashon hara, of talking bad about somebody in Chumash Vayikra. There it is a warning for us. That is the negative commandment for us who speak, not to speak it. Here, it is not to hear it and not to accept it. So it's interesting how Torah separates it. It's two different laws, and it's actually amazing. That's why it's such a powerful thing. It has so many different, you know, there's so many different people affected. But here we're saying, so even if somebody else is talking and you're not saying anything, if you believe him, even in your mind, and of course if you repeat it, then you are doing something terrible. So here we're talking about not listening and not accepting a negative report. And he says, Auladayan, and now also, this is just for everybody, but also to a judge specifically, Shalo Yishma Divrei Baldin at Sheyavai Baldin Chaveirai. This is another law, that he should not listen to the words of one litigant until the other one comes. So in other words, we know this in Torah, that if you have a judge, I mean, in secular law it's the same thing, but you cannot listen to one side before the other person is there. You have to listen to both at the same time. Why? Because what will this cause? This might cause you to have a bias towards one person. That's just the way it works, and that becomes a negative or a meritless report. Then I want to show you, what does he say? Also, very interesting thing. In the bottom, it says the Gemara says a fascinating thing. He says, because if nobody else is present, it's actually easier for somebody to lie. It's much harder to lie in front of the other person who's standing there. Therefore, to hopefully prevent this, you make sure both litigants are there in front of the judge at the same time. Quite a fascinating thing. Let's see what the next part of the pasuk. We said, Al toshes yotcha im rasha, you shall not put your hand with an evil person. Hatoyenes chaveirai, tvias sheker, so one who makes a false claim against his fellow, right? And then what does he want? It's not enough that he's making the false claim now. Shehiftechehu liyoyslai eid chamas, by promising him to be a fraudulent witness for him. He needs an accomplice. He needs somebody else to come and say, I witnessed that what you're saying is true. So here, this is a warning to us never to associate, so to speak, never to become an accomplice to somebody who wants to give a false report by lying for him. So it's an interesting thing. This is just another warning, again, in the concept of, I guess, if you want to say, of honesty, but it's considered literally an accomplice, and that's it if he testifies against. And even interestingly, it says, the halacha is, that let's just say somebody comes over to you and says, I want you to testify that, I don't know, that car crashed into mine, even though it's not true. Say you saw it, and you agree. You say, yes, don't worry, I'll come with you to court, and I'll say whatever you tell me to say, and it never materializes. It doesn't come to court. You have still transgressed. By agreeing to being a false witness, you have already transgressed. That's what this mitzvah is telling us, even if you don't end up coming to the court and having to say. So again, a very powerful warning for us. I'm going to give you a sheet that I just want to read something very, very, I thought it was a very nice thing from the Chassam Sofer. Here, and then you can pass this down. Just do the top one, and then we'll keep it the sheet for the rest after. I want to show you something very nice. The Chassam Sofer, I know this is a translation, but it's just very beautiful, because this is interesting how many of us will think that, oh, I'm not going to be a false witness for anybody. Of course not. Why would I? I'm not going to go lying for somebody. But I'll show you something interesting. Ripple from this. He says, this pasuk not only forbids testifying together with the wicked person, right, to support his contention, but also warns us not to be a false character witness. this, by associating publicly with the wicked. This is fascinating. Such behavior may give the misleading impression that the individual is indeed righteous. And we have a very interesting example that the Gemara gives in the opposite way. It says that any, you see, it says over here, a classic but contrasting example, as you see the Talmud's well-known assertion that anyone who was seen, even conversing with the sage Reish Lakish, was would be lent money without even requiring a witness, because everybody felt, anybody who was even talking to Reish Lakish, well, he must be an honest man, and people would trust them. So very interesting, the ramification of this is, as you can see, not to associate, in a sense, not to keep company with people who are not positive, I mean, who engage in bad, terrible things, and through doing that, people might judge them more favorably. That can be a problem. And we know, in politics, this can be a big problem, as we know. This is what definitely happens a lot. They do specifically engage in this. Okay, let's see now. We'll go on to the next pasuk. That's that pasuk. I want to continue because now we're going to come to one pasuk that's, well, it's a bit of a complicated one, but we'll get through. Let's see the next one. This one is more specific, as we can say, for courts. But we'll see a beautiful thing. I'll just read it first and then we'll see how Rashi explains. First thing, you shall not go after the many to do bad. So it sounds like you shouldn't go after the majority if they're not doing the right thing. But we'll see how Rashi explains it. This is on these Chumash pages. And then we go, V'loi. So the next page says, V'loi sa'ane al riv lintais. Do not respond over a dispute. Very interesting thing. I'm sorry, you shall not respond over a dispute. Lintais, which means to stray it, to tilt it. That's all. We don't know what that means yet. And then he says, Achrei Rabim Lahatais. It's an interesting thing. Achrei Rabim Lahatais does mean you go after the majority. Sounds like a contradictory pasuk. Let's understand what. First says, don't go. Now he says, yes, go. What's he talking about? So let's see what. This is very hard. We have to do it in Rashi. Rashi will tell us that this pasuk has been explained not according to the simple meaning, and he will tell us what that is, and then he will tell us his own way of interpreting it. But the not simple meaning, in a way, is a little bit clearer. So that's why I think Rashi gives it first. Okay, so let's see. If you look into the number 2, you can see on the middle part, you see where it says that big 23, the middle of page 295, and then it's 2, so that's the Rashi 2. Loisiye achare rabim leroy. So we're going to do this Rashi, and please stop me if it's not clear, I beg you, because if I'm not clear, I want to make sure that it's understood. So let's see. Yesh b'mikra zeh midrashei chachmei Yisrael. There are, he says, halachic interpretations. In English, they translate halachic interpretations. Midrashim are not really like midrashim, but it's halachic midrashim of the sages of Israel on this verse. So he's going to quote from other people how they explain it. Aval ein lashon hamikra miyushav behem al afnav. But the language of the pasuk doesn't fit in its context according to them. But he's still going to bring them. Okay, so he says, Mikan Darshu. They derived from here. So first, Rashi tells us what they say, and then he fits it into the words afterwards. So he says, first of all, She'ein Matin L'chayva. This is a very important halacha. That judges do not arrive at a verdict, which is to the detriment of the defendant, B'hachra'as Dayan Echad, by a majority of one judge. I'll tell you what that means. We're talking here specifically about life and death. If we are judging a capital punishment, and Torah has capital punishment. In Torah, there was a court of 23 judges that would judge for capital punishment. Let's just say you have 11 judges that say that the person is innocent, and 12 judges that say he's guilty. What do you do then? You would think, well, he's guilty. No. You cannot make the verdict according to only one extra for the majority. There has to be two for the majority. It's quite a complicated thing, which means, and this is a problem, what happens? So what happens if that happens? The judges, they think. In Torah, there's no jury system. It's 23 judges. So they're all very qualified. And the cases come, and literally 11 decide he's innocent and 12 decide he's guilty. What are they going to do? You can't change your mind. That's not how Torah works. So Torah says an interesting thing. You have to bring two extra judges into the case. Now, okay, so there's a few things that can happen. Either both judges will say he's innocent. Well, then that's fine. Then he'll be innocent. Both judges will say he's guilty. Well, that's also fine, because now we have more than one tilting to the guilty side. He's guilty. But what happens if one says he's guilty and one says he's innocent? We're in the same problem again. So then we bring another two judges, and we bring another two judges, and we bring another two judges, until you get to the number 71, you know, because that's the biggest court. Then they have to, the Sanhedrin, like, that's how big it was, yeah? Then they have to deliberate and deliberate until they finally come to some kind of way that either he's taki guilty by more than two, or innocent, and if you can't, then I think he's just innocent. That's it. He's not going to be killed by just one being more. Very interesting halacha list. Okay, because you see in Torah, that's so, it really doesn't want anybody to be guilty, and it wants to be sure, like as we can say, in every way possible, that if you're going to do this, that it's definitely the majority. Okay, so that's how there is it. Now let's see, let's continue. That's one part of the pasuk, and we'll see how it fits into the words. And then they say like this, v'saif ha-mikra darshu, and they expound the end of the verse, achrei rabim lahatais. We'll come to the middle in a minute. Then maybe we said, what does it mean after the many, to tilt after the many? So they say, what is this talking about? She'im yeshnayim mechayivin yisrael mezakin. If there is at least two more judges who opt to convict than those who opt to acquit, hine hadin al piyam l'chayva, then you can tilt the verdict to conviction by their words. So they explain that this majority is more than a one majority. Rabim, like plural, means you have to have a majority of two more. That's how they expound it, so to speak, from those words, in order to convict. Ubedine nefashis, we'll see in a minute another beautiful thing, but in dine nefashis akasa medaber, this is talking about specifically life and death. We'll go to the next page. Rashi continues on the next page, and he says, I'll show you the next thing, the middle. But we had a few interesting words there in the middle. V'loisa'ane al riv lintais. You shouldn't respond over a dispute. A very interesting thing. What does this mean? He says, v'emtza ha-mikra darshu. So they interpret the middle of the verse. Loisa'ane al riv. You shall not respond over a dispute. As what does that mean? He says, instead of reading it riv, you should read it rav. Do not respond against a master. What does that mean? She'en cholkin al mufla shebebeistin. They may not argue against the outstanding member of the court, lefichach, which means if somebody is a very high, I don't know, you know, very respected, especially respected member of the court, somebody who is a newer or of lower status, perhaps younger, should not be arguing with him. But how's that going to work? Right? If he says guilty and the younger one thinks he's innocent, how's it going to work? So Torah has a very beautiful thing. He says, therefore, in capital cases, what do? You begin polling the judges from the side, which means from the less important people, they say their verdict first, and then you go to the more important people. Because once the more important person says something, nobody could contradict them. It's a very beautiful way, even though this is obviously a halacha in a court, we learn from this something very important in life. Even by, I know it sounds ridiculous, but let's say by a Shabbos table, if you have children and if you have adults and you don't want the children to contradict the adults, perhaps you should allow the children to speak first. And in another case, if you feel that somebody will be intimidated, perhaps they come no less, let them speak first. If you give them a voice first, they will be able to express themselves freely without feeling that they are contradicting and without feeling intimidated. It's a very, very important thing. So you see, that's how the court works. In this way, everybody can say what they feel without being swayed, first of all, and without being intimidated. So that's how the court works, and therefore everybody can say. And that's what that middle of the pasuk means, according to these midrashim, as we say. Sure. I know. So it seems to be, it's a very interesting thing. I don't think it was such a big question in that time, because it would probably be experience would be a big thing. Somebody who knew more Torah. When you look in Pirkei Avos, you see how the Chachamim were very willing to admit that somebody else knew more than them or was more gifted in a sense in Torah learning. Maybe sometimes there could be an issue, and I suppose you would have very highly qualified, you know, the ones that everybody respects who would decide. That's how I would imagine. And they would actually sit in that order.
So it was to do with knowledge, not if it happened to be...
It was more to do with knowledge, yeah, definitely. No, definitely not wealth. It had to do with knowledge and righteousness, yeah, that's right, yeah. So it would be, so I think it would be somebody very, like a person that everybody respects who might decide if there was two people similar, equal, you know, where they would sit. So that's an interesting thing. Okay, let's see now. Lufi, then I just want to show you, now Rashi will put it back into the words. It sounds a bit repetitive, but he's putting it into the words of the Pasuk. So he says, Ulefi, Divrei Rabbi Seinu, according to the words of our rabbis, Kach Pisrin HaMikra, the interpretation of the Pasuk is as follows. So first of all, Loi Siya Achrei Rabim L'Rois, you shall not be after the many to do bad, means L'Chayev Misa B'Shvil Dayan Echad, to impose the death penalty on the basis of one judge, Sheyirbu M'Chayvin Al-Mazakin, one judge by whom those who convict outnumber those who acquit. That's the first part. V'Loi Sa'an Al-Harav, that's the second few words, as we said. And you shall not respond against the master, lintais midvarav, by veering from his words. In other words, somebody who is your master, you cannot contradict him. How come they're able to say it master? The word is riv, and riv really means quarrel, and they're explaining it as rav, because the pasuk doesn't have the yud. Do you see how it's written? Riv without a yud. So they say, don't read it riv, read it rav. That's why Rashi says it's not pshat. You understand? It's not the simple meaning. It's a bit of a, taking it out of context in a sense. It's really a different meaning. But that's why, because it doesn't have the yud, that's why they can say that. And then he says an interesting thing. Achrei rabim lahata, is to tilt after the many, means that yesh rabim sha'ata noita achareim, there is a majority after whom you do tilt the verdict. The Eimasai, when, and this is very interesting, Bizman, Shem, Shnayim, Hamachrim, Bimachayv, and Yaiser, Men, Hamazakin, when you have at least two more judges, as we said, who decide to convict than those who opt to acquit. But we also learn the other way something beautiful. Umimashma Shenemar, and from the implication of that which it says, Loisihye Achre Rabim Lirois, the last few words, you shall not go after the many to do bad. What do we learn from that? Shoimeya ani avalheye mohem litaiva. But I understand that you should be with them for the good. What does that mean for the good? For the good you do go after the majority. Mikan amru dine nefashais matin al pi echod l'schus. When it comes to a guilty, you need a majority of more than two. But when it comes to saying somebody's innocent, even if it's, let's say, 12 say they're innocent, and 11 say guilty, he's innocent. Very interesting. Torah leans to making somebody, and this is a little bit of a, not justice if you want to say, but this is here a tzedek. Torah wants people to be innocent, as we can see, and therefore we do go after a one majority for innocence. And we learned that from that, that we say, as we say, Achrei Rabin Lahatais, we go after the majority, but also the fact that we say that we don't go after the majority for bad, that shows that we do go for good. Okay, so very interesting how they learn all these different things from the subtleties of the words. Let me just see. V'al pi shnayim l'chayva, but obviously you need two for a majority of two to convict. That's what you need. Now, I want to show you Rashi's. Now, Rashi said at the beginning, this is not the pshat, right? So let's see. Let's see what he says. Rashi says, first of all, Unculus says, let's look on the next page, how Unculus comes. And Unculus tells us on page 297, this is a very interesting thing. This is totally different. Do not refrain from teaching what is asked of you regarding a judgment. And he says that's what Unculus says. What does that mean? Do not refrain from teaching what is asked of you regarding a judgment. Why should you refrain? Why would you think you would hesitate? So he says, because, look at the words, Loisana al rivlintais, you shall not respond regarding a dispute by turning away. Im yishalducha davar lamishpat, if they will ask you about a matter for your judgment, loisane lintais litzad echa, do not answer by turning away to one side, ulesalek atzmecha min ariv, and removing yourself from the dispute. Ela heve don oisai lamitai, rather judge the matter to its truth. Many, we know in life, There are people who like to avoid any conflict, right, at all costs. And if there is a conflict, what they might do is they might not want to give their opinion, even when they hold strongly that what they're saying is correct. We're not talking about making conflicts. Conflicts is not a good thing. But if there is a very important matter that people have to decide what's the correct way, a person should not withhold from his opinion if he's in a position of leadership or has a position of influence to give his opinion. Now, a judge also has this. A judge cannot say, well, recluse, right? I'm going to recluse myself unless there's a reason for it, right? Unless he has a bias. But if he doesn't have a bias and it's just that he doesn't want to because so many important people are saying the other way or whatever it may be, that's not acceptable. You cannot withhold if you truly believe one way. It's a very, very important thing. This is a hard thing. You know, when we think about it, it seems all simple and clear, but it's so hard. We see we are so influenced, and we do find it difficult to stand up for what we believe in, especially when we know, and this is going to come out afterwards, that we might be hurting somebody, or that somebody will be upset with us because of what we are doing. Very challenging. Yes.
Would judgments have been like voting secret, or would they have seen each other?
I know, it's a good question.
Because
yes.
The words here, you shall not be after the many to do bad, suggests that by having the most senior judges at the end, they're less likely to be swayed by the popular
vote. Yes, yes. So it was in public. Yeah, definitely. Definitely that all the judges were sitting there together. There's no question. The question is if the defendants were there at the time. I have a feeling they were because you have a lot of halachas afterwards about the fear of now that you've said, let's say you've decided that they were guilty, even at the end they weren't guilty, but now there's the grudge that they will have, and we'll see what follows after. So I think that everybody knows who said what. Yes, that's what makes it difficult. But Torah believes so much in truth and in conviction and in honesty that we're meant to uphold society in a way where we can say something and expect that the person will not bear a grudge. It's not simple. That's what's supposed to happen. Okay. And it actually explains this beautiful, the Midrashim talk about David HaMelech, that he, very interesting, David was also a judge. We know there are many stories about him judging. And what would happen is that we say, you know, you would expect compassion, and even if he had like a poor person or whatever, he would come, and if he was guilty, he was guilty. So he would judge, you know, strictly according to the law. But as soon as the judgment was over, then he would extend compassion. So that's the Jewish way. So like examples are given, I don't know, the person owes a lot of money, and okay, but then he would find a way of helping him. But the fact is that he was still proclaimed guilty or that he still owes it. So it's very interesting how that works, yeah. Okay, I just want to show you what Rashi says about this. A very interesting Rashi says, V'ani Aimer, what's my opinion? Not according to Unkelos and not according to the Chachamim. I have a different opinion of how the pshat is. Not that he disagrees with them, but he says that how you read the pasuk in the most simple, so to speak, way, in accordance to a simple meaning, and its interpretation is as follows. So he says, you shall not go after the many to do bad means, if you see wicked people perverting justice, loy saimar, do not say, hayil v'rabim heim, since they are many, hinini naita achareyem, I will then follow them. That's the first thing. Okay, big one. The next thing, loy sa'an al riv lintais, you shall not respond over a dispute to turn. So Rashi says, v'im yishalcha hanadayin al loy sa'an mishpat, if the defendant asks you about that perverted judgment, Al ta'anenu al hariv davar hanayta acharei eisen harabim. Do not respond to him regarding that dispute with something that follows that wicked multitude. Lahatais es amishpat me amitai, by turning the judgment away from its truth. Ela emar es hamishpat kasher hu. Rather, state your opinion of the judgment as it is truthfully. And very strong language Rashi uses here. V'kailar yehe toloi b'tzavar harabim, and let the chain of responsibility for false judgment hang upon the neck of the wicked majority. Obviously, this is talking about times when the courts are whatever, yeah, they're not honest and things are not going well and, you know, and everything's being perverted. It's a very, very, very difficult situation. A person might feel that they shouldn't say their opinion because, A, they'll be in danger physically, but not only that, what will it help? Perhaps he's going to be causing machleik is like, yeah, division for no reason. There's no purpose, he might think, because what am I going to accomplish? That's the majority. No. Truth is truth is truth is truth, according to Torah. And if you hold that what you are saying is the truth and what they're doing is wrong, and you might even know for sure what they're doing is wrong. Maybe they've accepted bribes, whatever it may be. They have ulterior motives, whatever. If you know that, you have to hold strong to your belief and you have to let people know. And as Rashi says, let the responsibility hold upon the majority, meaning that if you do not say what you believe, then you are responsible. Quite a powerful thing. That's what Rashi says. A very strong language from Rashi, how what this pasuk means according to the pshat. I want to just read one more pasuk, and then we're going to see some of the mefarshim here. Then the pasuk tells us, and this is interesting because it has to, like it sort of wants to strengthen this. So it actually starts, I'm sorry, the pasuk starts on the page before, but it's Vidal loy sehedar berivai, which means, this is pasuk gimel, that you shall not glorify, that's how they translate, but we'll see in a minute what that means, a destitute person in his dispute, which means do not be swayed by a person who is like nebach, you know, a poor, poor person, and say, I'll judge him favorably because he's poor. If he's guilty, he's guilty. If he's innocent, he's innocent. It doesn't matter his background, what he's coming from. Torah doesn't have that view. As we said, what does it have? You should help him. That's on the side. But that has nothing to do with swaying the judgment. And as you can see in Rashi, Lo sehedar, lo sachalek, lo kavod, you shall not accord him honor by deciding the case in his favor. By say, he's destitute, I will decide in his favor, and I will thereby honor him. Meaning, you might think the poor guy is already so kicked by society, he's so looked down, he's so demeaned, and he's so down there in the dumps. If I say he's innocent, I will lift him. It's not up to you. That's God's, you know, that's God's business. What you can do is you can help him afterwards, even though by your giving him this negative judgment, so to speak, actually makes him more demeaned. It's true, and you won't be able to help that. But too bad. That's what the halacha says. And this follows right after the previous pasuk. It's very intentional. I want to just show you, see if I can, which page it's on, because it was another page, because I made it afterwards. I'm sorry, I feel bad that I'm giving out all these pages, but there's a few beautiful things on this pasuk here. Okay, Daisy, this one for you, and we'll give these out here. I'm here, pass down, I'll show you what I want to do here. Okay, so I want to show you, this has a few different things from other pasukim also, but look at number 4 first. This is very cute. I think if anybody was here, Daisy, you were here on Shabbos. Sorry, a bit of a repetition. A very beautiful thing in number 4. Very cute. Oh, sure, sure. Plenty, plenty here. Sorry. Any more? There's plenty, plenty here. Any more needed? Everybody has? Because there's more. Does everybody have one? One more? Beautiful. Sorry. Okay. Let's look at number 4. I want to show you something very cute because we're talking about the honesty and the truth and we'll get to more of that later, but just a beautiful, it's a cute little story in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us a story that Rav Havakam Metzaira Lei Debeso. They had a very interesting marriage, Rav and his wife, and Rav's wife would aggravate him. How would she aggravate him? Because he Amar Lei Avide Lei Tilupache, whatever it's Aramaic, whenever he would tell her to make lentils, what would she do? She would make chimtzi. Chimtzi, the commentaries say they like a different kind of peas or other kinds of legumes. Okay, so he'd make something else, she would make. And if he said, prepare me chimtzi, she would instead prepare him lentils. Okay, well, that's what happened for much of his marriage, and he accepted it. His son grew up. His son's name was Reb Chiya. He became a very, very great sage. And ki gadol Chiya Bere. So Chiya grew up. And whenever he would relay his father's requests to his mother, what did he do? He would reverse them. He realized what his mother was doing. So he said, I have a great plan. I'll tell my mother that she wants legumes, so she'll make him what he really wants. So he would reverse it. What happened? Rav, an interesting thing. Upon receiving the desired dish and not realizing Chiya's what he was doing, his whole plan. So what did Rav say? Your mother has improved her ways. So Chia didn't just say silent, he had to tell his father what he had done. So he replied to him, it was actually I who reversed your request. So what does Rav say? So very beautiful this, because how does Rav respond? Rav replied to him. First of all, he says, this is a very interesting thing. This bears out the popular saying, "Dinafik minach, taima lifach." Very interesting thing, that the child who comes from you will educate you. You can learn from your children. Children, sometimes smarter than the parents. Okay? So I should have thought of this trick. But then, that's the first thing he says. But then what does he say to his son, to Rav Chiya? He says, however, you shouldn't do this. Why shouldn't you do this? Limdu, and he brings a pasuk from Tanakh, he says, Limdu l'shoinam diber sheker. It's because they train their tongues to speak falsehood. And then the pasuk continues, it will become habitual and they will be speaking falsehood. It's a negative thing to do. Okay, it's a very, very interesting thing. This is a very beautiful story because of two things. I mean, it's a sad story in a way, because I don't know why the wife had to make everything the opposite, but whatever the story was, that's what she did. And it's interesting, I must tell you that the Gemara continues with other stories of Chachamim who had difficult wives, and they describe how, one of them describes how he used to go to the marketplace and buy, whenever he would see something nice, he would buy it for his wife. And his colleagues obviously knew that this man's wife wasn't so good to him. And I said, why are you buying her so many presents? She doesn't treat you so well. And he said, no, she's the mother of my children. And she gave like a whole list. And it's a very beautiful thing about treating, very fascinating how even if you're not treated well, you can still treat well in return. Anyways, but that's not over here. But over here we see something quite interesting. His son did something wrong, that's the truth. Because he's not saying the truth, right? He's lying. And lying is negative, as we can see in our pasuk. No matter what, keep to the truth. Truth is paramount. It's such a value in Torah. So Rav is not happy with Rav Chiya's twisting of the truth. Yet, what does he do first when he tells him off? He compliments him. It's quite amazing. Again, thousands of years ago, think about the modern education. First, he compliments him and he says, wow, you know, the parents learned from the children, you're so clever. Only after that does he tell him not to behave in that way. So he lifts him, makes him feel quite good about himself, and then he tells him that's not the correct way to behave. So quite a powerful story you can see in this. But what we see also is how careful we have to be about speaking the truth, even though who was really getting hurt? Nobody, really. And everybody was benefiting, you would think. So you would think. Okay, anyways, but these are great tzaddikim and they don't want to be trained in that way. I want to just show you on this page number one, the same page that we're holding. Sorry, we're back and forth everywhere. Yes, this is the one we're going to do now. Beautiful. Page number one. This is an Aruch Chaim. It's a drop long, but I'll just show you something very, again, talking how much the truth we have to keep to, and how this pasuk shows us, you know, when we're talking about the judges. So it's on this same page, so the number one, right? The one that we were looking at now with the Gemara on number four, number one. Chaf Gimel, it says on top. I'm sorry, I didn't write that it's the Aruch Chaim. So he says, Lo siach rei rabim, rabbi seinu zechreinim levracha, hirbu lidresh pasuk zeh. So our rabbis have spoken a lot about this pasuk. Aval ein ha-mikra misyashiv lefi pshutai, but the pasuk doesn't seem to fit according to its pshat. So he says also how I will explain it in the simple, straightforward. V'nira lefarish ha-kasuv lefi masha amra ha-taira. So he says, it appears to me that we can explain this pasuk in accordance to what the Torah says. What does the Torah tell us? V'shaftu ha-eida, that you shall judge the congregation. V'hitzilu, and you shall save them. Which you would think, and it does, we know, we even saw, that the best thing is to try and get somebody to be innocent, right? That's really the goal, the hopeful goal. But it doesn't always happen. So he says, what might a person think? So Amruzal, Eida Shaifetas ve'eida Matzelas, right? The congregation judges, the congregation saves. Aval im paschu kulam l'chayva potter. This is a very fascinating halacha. We didn't mention this. Let's just say you have the 23 judges sitting there, and this guy is standing there, and he's committed a terrible crime, right? This is a capital offense. Every single one of the judges says guilty. So we would think, that's great. No question. He's guilty. If every one of the 23 judges say the person is guilty, the person is not killed. That's the halacha. Because in Torah, We believe that it's not possible that we should not be able, at least one person out of the 23 should not be able to find some loophole, some favor. Otherwise, something is wrong. It's interesting. We don't necessarily understand this. This is the way Hashem wants. Fascinating. It's a very fast, powerful concept just generally in life, if even for ourselves. If we see somebody, and when we look at them, we only see bad, we better reassess ourselves big time. We're in trouble, so to speak. That's a big, if you want to say, red flag for us. Not for that person, but for us, as we say. So this is the halacha. The halacha is we're not saying the person's innocent. They're not innocent. But we can't kill them. In other words, Hashem will have to take care. If they're guilty, Hashem will take care. But we can't do the, you know, we can't give him the punishment of death, the death penalty, if everybody says, okay, so now what happens? If you're a judge, okay, and you're sitting in a court, and you see how things are developing, right? Because people discuss before they give their verdict, there's a lot of discussion. And it appears to you that everybody thinks he's guilty, right? Okay, let's see what the Aruch Haim says now. And you think, let's see what he says. So he says, "V'im pasuk okay." So Baha Kosov Khan lahaser beiz mechshelin. So this pasuk wants to remove us from two possible mistakes, obstacles. Asher yikashal b'hem chacham, that a wise judge might stumble with, mayem tzoz din ze, because of this halacha. So the first thing you might do is ha'echad b'hagia mishpat kaze, when this such a judgment comes, v'yireh chacham echad me'ashoftim shekol chaveirav paschu l'chayva, that he sees all of his friends are saying that the guy's guilty, v'hu chayshev b'daitai ki hu zakai, but he thinks the person's innocent. So what does he think he's going to do? So he's smart. He thinks he's going to be smart. And what does he do? So if he says innocent, and everybody else said guilty, well, he's not going to be innocent anymore, right? I mean, they might bring another judge, and then what will happen, right? Because you have said innocent, 22 have said guilty, now we're going to bring more people to make more majority, whatever they're going to do to work it out. So what will he think he could do? I have a brilliant idea. Even though I think he's innocent, 22 people think he's guilty, I'll say guilty, and he's off the hook. That's the best way to do it. That's what the smart man will think. So that's why the pasuk tells us, don't go according to the majority. You have to say what you think as you think it. In other words, you can't twist the halacha to fit the way you feel to get the outcome that you want. Very, very powerful concept here. So very interesting. That's the first problem that might happen, as we say. Right, if I say innocent, he's going to end up being guilty. Because there's a judgment and a saving. In other words, there's guilty and innocent. And therefore what will happen is they will do the opposite of what my real opinion is. So I will say guilty. Then my actual true feeling will actually come true, right? In other words, that he's innocent. Okay, then he says, then there's another way that we can do it. Okay, so now I'll tell you orally the other way. There's another opposite way that it could happen. Let's just say that you think that the person is innocent, right? Not here. This person thought that the person was sorry. This first one, what did we say? He was guilty, right? He thought he was guilty. Yes. So if you think the person is innocent, and you see everybody is saying guilty, and if yeah, right. So what should you say? Guilty. Then he's gonna get off. The Aruch Haim says, you can't do that. The pasuk is, it's quiet. I know that's the way it works, because Torah is very, exactly right. That's exactly right. That's the story. So that's the point Torah tells us, and the very beautiful thing the Aruch Haim says at the end, what will help you in your resolution, even though, you see, even though a person, we're talking about a person really convinced, you know, you're convinced that he's innocent, right? Or you're convinced that he's guilty. And by doing what you're doing, you're actually going to get the outcome that you want. What's going to prevent you? So the Aruch Haim says you have to remember one very important thing. That it's not just 23 judges sitting there. There's an ultimate judge sitting there, and that's God. God sits there with you. And if Hashem prescribed the Torah to work this way, you just have to go and rely on His prescription, so to speak, and say what you're meant to say, and rely that Hashem will do what He has to do. Either the person is really innocent, even though you don't see it, or the person is really guilty, or Hashem will take care of it a different way, whichever way it is. And that's a very important part. That's the, if you want to say, it's a very fascinating thing. In Torah we have, this is the fine line that we tread, this very difficult thing to be a judge or anything in Torah, because Torah has a very, very big reliance on the human intellect. It does. You can see, we have a lot, I mean, the wisdom, just in the intellectual side, is very it's very deep, it's very complex, and yet at the same time, with the reliance on our intellect and the complexity of our intellect and the ability to think in the most deep way, we still have the faith in Hashem. Faith and intellect don't really go together very well. In a sense, sometimes they're the opposite. And Torah expects us to work with both of them together, constantly. It's a very difficult ask, very difficult. But this is the demand of Torah. And if it's the demand, we can do it. That's a very powerful thing that we have to always remember. And it's interesting, because when we do, one of the beautiful things we find is that it definitely helps. We're talking about these judges, because, you know, to be able to sleep at night after, let's say, if you do everything according to the way the Torah prescribed, then the judge will be able to sleep at night, because ultimately he knows that it's Hashem who really decides and Hashem who makes things work the way they work. So it's not really you who have controlled the situation. So you don't have to feel, in that sense, that heavy weight. I want to just do one more part of the Aruch HaMetzvah, then the last, number three. Just looking at the last paragraph, it's Allah said that you should show, this is a very beautiful one, when we talked about showing that you shouldn't, you know, show, so to speak, compassion to the poor person, if you want to say, you shouldn't honor him. So he says, Yirmaiz, he takes it out of context. Yirmaiz b'teveiz b'rivai. So it's hinted in the word b'rivai in his judgment, right, in his quarrel, al derech oim ramzal, that he has a quarrel. What's the quarrel? Ki ha'ani oisem meriva im kainai. This is number three on that same page, that the poor person actually does a quarrel with his creator. It's always in a quarrel with his creator. Lama zan lakol v'hu birav ube'ayram. Why is Hashem supplying everybody else? And I'm hungry and I'm no clothes. This is what a poor person feels many times, feels a little bit, if you want to say, that he's disadvantaged by Hashem, right? So this poor person is in a quarrel with Hashem. Now what happens? V'chol hanay sein pruta la'ani, if you give the poor person money, umefar nesai, right? You sustain him. Harei ze mashbis riv ani me'al hashamayim. You actually save the quarrel, so to speak, from this poor person with the heaven. And what do we do? Bizman she'e, in other words, you are capturing it away, because now the poor person won't have a quarrel, because now he has what to eat, now he's not hungry, now he's not cold, he has what to wear, you've supplied him. But ubizman she'ein chayne l'dalim, if you do not have compassion on the poor person, tainas ani, then his complaint is proper, it's correct. He's taking it out of context. He says, Dal loy sehedar. You should not allow the poor person to have a proper complaint. How? By not giving him money. Make sure you give him money. You remove his complaint against God. That's our responsibility. That's what he says. V'lazeh yitzav Hashem. That's what Hashem commands. Shelo yisoy v'vo hidur l'riv. Do not cause a, if you want to say some impartial, like to make that the quarrel that this poor person has should be correct. Imkayne with his creator. Ella yichayne nuhu kemishpat chayne dalim. Have compassion, like it says, have compassion upon the poor. It's totally out of context from the halacha, but a very beautiful thing. The poor person is in a quarrel with Hashem. It's up to you, the bystander, to make sure that you remove any reason for the quarrel, and then he doesn't have a claim anymore. That's our responsibility, the bystanders who see. So just a very beautiful thing. What did you say?
Yeah, You have to intervene.
You do.
You don't leave it to Hashem.
No, you're right. I know. So you see, Hannah, this is complicated, yes? Remember we had that in that community. It's a very good... You know, remember we had that? That's what Rabbi Akiva's thing. Yes. Oh, if Hashem likes the poor people, he'll supply them. Here we said, because it's a mitzvah. Because Hashem commanded us. You see, it's interesting. When Hashem commands us to give the poor person money, he wants us to intervene. So it's very interesting, Chana, yeah. We're not meant to judge that poor person when we're just a simple bystander. He's not coming, we're not the court. That's not up to us. Let the God's court take care of that. Or if we're a judge, that's a different story. As we said, if a poor person comes to proper court, then you have to judge him legally. But when it's us, just a simple bystander, we have absolutely no right to make any judgment. All we have a right to do is to assess what he needs. Yeah, it's quite an interesting...